Blog Talk Radio.
I'm in Baltimore. We rocking with real radio because the only radio that I would ever rock would be real radio. Let's go.
What up, what up, what up? You know what it is, your boy SP the Ghost, LOXD Block, and you are checking out real radio because the radio is real. Fuck with us. Tune in. Make sure you play it. Tell a friend and tell a friend. Real radio, SP the Ghost, LOXD Block. Yeah.
Yo, you got to love the energy the South P brings. I'm telling you. Good morning, family. What's the word? What's the part? Look, energy is the word of the day. This is how we are feeling. I hope you all are feeling the same energy and love. A lot of things going on in life and in our lives as they are in yours, so we're glad that you took a moment to chill with us today. The way you get a hold of us, of course, is by calling in at 818-691-7348. Again, the number is 818-691-7348. Now, the important thing is if you have something to say, you want to add something to the show, you have to hit the number one. That shows that you're active on the board, and then you have a question or comment, we will screen you, bring you onto the show, let you say what you need to say, and boom. The screening process is nothing stringent. We just want to know your name, and if you had a question or a comment, that's pretty much it. Then we let you say your piece. Then if you get ignorant or arrogant, then we will cut your ass off. But other than that, you are free to do what you do. The beauty of doing this way is that we can do that. We can have the freedom of tongue and the freedom of movement that you cannot necessarily have when you're doing this the other way, and that's the corporate way. And I've been on both sides, and I like this ride just a little more better. That's why we are here. Sis, what's going on, Sister Rashi? Good morning to you. How are you?
I woke up so invigorated. I was like,
oh,
hey,
energy.
I have, as of yesterday, I have no job, right? I'm done teaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My apartment is done on the 30th, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could go anywhere. I could instead of a storage, I could pack it all into a U-Haul, grab all my crap, mm-hmm. grab all my documents, get in the U-Haul with my son, and we could head north, south, east, or west right now. There's no man, there's no you know, my mama gone. My mama don't care if I win the lottery. She ain't leaving her chair. I could be anywhere now. I could officially be anywhere. So I was like, okay. But West, hell, I can find something to do in the West. They need people to teach in the West. They'll find a comparable something. But it's on fire. Okay, not the West. East. I'm ahead towards my homies. Lee. Y'all just got through having thunder. Y'all get weather coming up and down that coast down there. Coming off that ocean. Y'all get tore down at least where it used to be once every 3 to 5. Now it's 3 to 5 every year.
Not east.
South. But okay. What was the point of my mama packing her whole family, my grandmother that is, packing her whole family up in 1962?
Whole family.
Selling my uncle's land that he had worked so hard in the army to save his money and buy, getting ripped off by white folks, taking it and moving to St. Louis. That was the whole point. I was supposed to take that whole opportunity she provided for us when we left the South, and I was supposed to do something with it. Right?
Yeah. And return it to where you started in a more disadvantaged circumstance is not the answer, right?
Going back, literally, worse off than she left.
Right. Okay. It's not the answer, right?
Not the answer. No,
so
then that
means you stuck where you are.
So up now. Up now?
No, not yet.
Where I have a possibility of not seeing nobody who even look like me or possibly even think. They got the opportunities up there. Well, if I move
call
to
Brother
Billings,
Diamond Bear.
If I call a Billing, move to Billings, if I move to South Dakota, or they ready for me. They begging for me because they tired of having to. They can't find nobody to hire to get the diversity money. Problem happens that I personally don't want to live out the rest of my days schooling my gal friend Val on why it's not okay to touch my hair. I don't want my son having Becky, Kimball, Amber, Whitney, and Kyle as his opportunities to have mating opportunities with. I'm gonna need a Sharkeisha in there. My son is who he is.
Let me tell you something. Ain't nothing like a Keisha in your life. I swear for you.
You gotta have a Sharkeisha, baby. You gotta have a Nita. If you don't get one Juanita in your life, you don't know. You got to get an Isha. He need an Isha. You know how I am about my Ishas. And my love. And he need a love. He need a love. You know what I'm talking about. Love something. Or something Isha. He need one of them in his life. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, Lord, I tell you.
And so these are
Nikki,
my options.
I looked
around and I said, "Holy smokes! I'm where I'm supposed. This is Kansas City. The worst we get, the highest we're gonna get probably is about 101 or 2. But 101 is a nice day out there with Mr. Rodney. That's what they do out west." And 100, they praying for 101 out west right now. Hell, the fire is hotter than 101, and it ain't even the weather. It's just the heat coming off the fire. Man, this is it. We don't get that water when it by the time it hits us. That water you get, Lee, y'all got coming off that ocean with high winds. all them monsoons and tornadoes and thunderbolt, all
don't
that.
Don't get no monsoons and no daggone tornadoes.
All that high water y'all get coming in out of that, off of that. Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
By the time it reaches this, that energy reaches us here in Kansas City, if we be praying for it to rain on our crops.
Okay, well, as you spoke on the heat and the hotness, that energy, I'm telling you, that's the word for the day. We're doing some Sesame Street type shit right now. The word for the day is energy. Good morning, Brother Rodney. What's the word? It's hotter than fish grease out there, bro. Is it 110 already? It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. It's 110 yet.
Well, good morning, Sister Rashi. Good morning, Brother Lee. I hope you guys are enjoying that cool weather that you're having back east. And, brother, this is like some of the best time of the day, early in the morning. It's 84 degrees right now. It's not even 84? Scheduled to break 100. So this is like, you know, time to get your grilling and your outdoor pool parties on.
Well, what is it going to go up to? That's the question.
You know, but it's not even supposed to break 100 today. So, I mean, I think they're wrong, which they usually are when they say that, because they said it's going to get up to 99. So 99, to me, says it's probably going to be at about 102. So it will be a cool day here in Vegas.
Yeah, 102 is a cool day in Vegas, ladies and gentlemen. Please understand that. This is a cool day in Vegas.
Mr. Rodney, did you hear me saying that I was contemplating leaving where I am? Because everything right now is loose. I don't have ties to any lease or gentleman friend or nothing. Me and my son, could you pick up a U-Haul and hit the streets and just find somewhere real quick to be? And I started going north, east, south, and west, and I realized that I need to, you know, how do people play basketball and they put their foot down and they go all the way around in a circle trying to get away from the defense. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm literally in one place just going around and around and around. And it looks like I'm right here.
Right,
I'm right here, Mr. Rodney. And it's very sad to me to look and find myself already where I'm supposed to be.
Well, you know, Sister Rashi, Vegas is always open armed. This is the West Coast Mecca, the West Coast Black Mecca. I believe soon just the Black Mecca of the United States. So the more of us that we get to come here, the better it will be for Nevada, Nevadans, for those who are coming here. And I think the better it'll be for the country, because we are and we will change this country right here from the 702.
Okay. Well, that's a bold statement, but that's what's up. You know, battle born, right? Battle born, battle tested.
Battle born. Came into the Union to save the Union, and we did. And Black people have been saving this country even before it was a country. And to the chagrin of many, Black people are going to be the ones that save this country once again. And not just for the country's sake. It'll be for Black people's sake. But what's good for Black people historically has been good for the idea of America and the basic principle of creating that more perfect union. It's been Black people that's pushed this country the closest to it. It's also been the white people that's pushed back the furthest from it, as we saw in 1-6.
Speaking of, so we wanted to talk about that last week, and unfortunately, Brother Rodney had to do some things for himself and get himself together.
Unfortunately, we weren't able to have the conversation. Not unfortunate that you had to get yourself together.
But we wanted to go into it this week because part of the title of the show this week is Unraveling of America. And as we've gone through this charade that what we all saw before our faces on 6 January didn't happen, or it was a total misunderstanding, you know, just calm down. You misunderstood what was happening, okay? And the movement of one chamber to address the issue, at least have conversations about the issue, while the other chamber of the Congress, the U.S. Congress, is in total denial. Well, that's not true. Half of the chamber is in total denial of the incident ever occurring. There was some reporting out this week about the commissions and the status of those on the commission, and Nancy Pelosi turned down two nominees that came from the Republican side, which gave what's the boy's name? What's his name, Ronnie? It's escaping me right now. Cover to pull everyone.
Kevin McCarthy?
McCarthy. I wanted to say McCarthy. I couldn't think of it. There it is. Thank you. When you said Kevin, I remembered that more. Gave him cover to pull everybody from the commission and have the Democrats go at it alone. Partisanship is going to be the demise of our American democracy. We used to be able to agree to disagree, but meet somewhere along the middle. It may not have been perfectly in the middle, may have been the fringes of the middle, but we were at least compromise at some point. The hard stance against compromising is going to be the death of our democracy. I can't say it any other way than that. No one knows everything, and teamwork makes the dream work. Now, that's not to say that one group of people or one person cannot give great ideas consistently. That's not to say that at all. But even in those ideas, there can be room for improvement. And that's where the other party comes into play, or the other person comes into play and say, hey, great idea, wonderful, definitely that's a beautiful framework, but there's some tenets in it that just aren't going to wash well with everybody. We're trying to be more inclusive than exclusive. We'll talk about some more of it, inclusivity and exclusiveness a little bit later, but we'll stick with this subject for right now. There's no denying that on the 6th of January, as we all sat and watched or stood and watched this insurrection, that there were two narratives about it. One narrative about it is this is the opportunity for the people to have their voice be heard, clearly. The other one is and was, look at these clowns. Trying to overthrow our government. And Rodney, I think you made this point just beautifully when you said, I don't think people understand just how close we were to chaos. Had these folks succeeded, we may not have the luxury today to do what we're doing today, because we could have very much wound up in the shoes of, let's say, a Haiti, or let's say a Cuba, or any place in which martial law and or martial rule is of precedence, because the overthrowers are fearful of being overthrown. So, we really could have been in the most chaotic state ever, even far so than many people would care to imagine. But we aren't, by the grace of God. You know, folks resisted. They put up just enough fight to push back on other folks. But at what cost? As we have been a beacon to the world for so long, as the model of democracy, at what cost did that insurrection have us lose our stature in the world as that beacon, or have us lose the appearance to the world as that beacon? I don't know if we have been able to grasp what the tally of that cost, but we're going to have to. We're going to have to, not only because we're sitting on the brink of another midterm election, which that's still the recounts in Arizona, the recounts in Texas, the recounts just any place at this point is a waste of time. It's a waste of time. We have a seated president and vice president of the United States. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. I don't even want to entertain that part, to be honest with you, but some people do. Rodney, you got anything to add?
Well, I don't know if I have any specific anything to add. I think you kind of hit the point, and that is that whether we think America is what it should be or not, and most of us, if we're black, know that it isn't, we do have to realize and recognize that when it comes to the ideas, the basic ideas are fairly solid. And America, for as much bad as it has done in America, but also in the world, it has also done good in America and in the world. And I think a part of that is you have to go to other countries and see the good and the bad of them, and also look back at America from the outside. Because, you know, when we're inside, we're kind of fed some pablum on what America is. But then once you get a chance to travel the world a little bit, you get a better idea of what's really going on in the world as well as what's going on in America. And if you give it an honest look, you can say, wow, we did do some good stuff, but we are not who we say that we are. And for me, the idea is to push us to who we say that we are and then be it. Because that's good for us and it is good for the world. Now, I am not a socialist, but I've read up on socialist principles. I'm not a communist. Far from it. I've read up on their precepts. And I used to think I was a capitalist up until maybe a few to several years ago. I used to believe I was a capitalist because that's the pablum that I'd been fed. But I realized that I'm not a capitalist. I'm an American.
Now, what are you, Rodney?
I'm an American, but I'm also African-American. And the reason why I say that is because, go ahead.
Wait a minute, brother. Wait. Because, you know, I'm listening.
Right.
And you are if you're an American, what is the prevailing social methodology here in America?
Well, I'm going to answer that question to how I perceive it, because this is my view on America. The prevailing idea of who we are is what we're told that we are. I don't believe that is who we are, though. I believe it is a construct to strive for, and that you have to constantly strive for it. When you do not, then we find ourselves where we were on 1/6 and where we have been ever since. But I will tell people that 1-6 didn't happen on 1-6. We've been building on 1-6 really ever since the start of the Civil War. So 1-6 to me is an extension of the Civil War. It is not something new. But as I said in the very beginning, black people have always pushed this country to live up to its ideas. And its ideas in general are pretty solid.
I'm pretty sure I know this answer, Lee. What is your mantra as far as how you would deal with the people and method and how to make an economy methodology?
Well, you said make the economy methodology?
You understand how he said, you know, capitalist, socialist. You understand how he broke it down?
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to think of this and put it the right way. In America,
I hear some tap dance. Stop tap dancing.
I know, right?
No, come on, man. You're not running for office. You're not finna lose your seat on the city council. Okay, come on.
In America, money and power have been pretty much synonymous. There have been exceptions where some folks had power, but they didn't have money. But most often, money and power have been synonymous. In the case that we see ourselves in today, it is very much that way. Bezos just took off and had his little space journey. Sir Richard did his
Branson.
About a week previous. Yeah, he did his about a week previous. This is a whole lot of money being spent on ventures, the private ventures that have been reserved for the government for 50-something years. 60-something. Why are they putting their money to use doing these type of projects? I believe that they understand that a reckoning is coming, and they understand that they need to be prepared and start preparing folks for the thought process of leaving Earth, to be honest with you. Now, how does that fall into my mindset of an economy? I'm not a communist. I believe in that. I would say that I was a mixture of a socialist and a capitalist. I believe that you should be able to control your inventions and profit from them. But at the same time, I believe that you owe repentance to society at large, because society at large will have to suffer in some way or not from whatever service or good you manufacture. You know, I'm thinking about, and I apologize for so many ums, I'm thinking about an article I saw this morning about a housing project here in the city of Baltimore that is going to be turned into an affordable living facility. Well, when they say affordable living, who does that really address? Does that address the average person in Baltimore City, the average person in Baltimore County, or does that address people whom are doing pretty okay for themselves? And Rodney and I had this conversation, like a week or two ago, and I was talking about the opportunities that have presented themselves to me and the reason that I sometimes take these opportunities. And we were talking about money and so on and so forth, and I was sharing some stuff with him. He's like, well, bro, you do pretty okay. And I was like, yeah, I do pretty okay. And I'm very fortunate and blessed to be in that situation that I can profit from my labor and it turn around and do okay for me, to afford me opportunities to do stuff where I actually have disposable income. But that's not everybody that I know. Everybody that I know doesn't have those opportunities. Everyone that I know, for whatever their reason, you know, maybe it was, as Rashi is quick to say, they were breeders really, really early in life, and they never understood that their breeding had to stop at some point in order for them to afford tomorrow. Maybe it is that they just never educated themselves to the point where they could actually read, so they would not pass Rashi's fourth test whenever she does allow a man to come into her circle. I don't know, but I do know that it is not getting any easier for the average person to survive in the economy that we currently have. Yet the economy is booming. The stock market is flourishing. Headline came across my phone just yesterday. Stocks flirt with highest numbers ever. So the economy is booming. But does that trickle down? Does that mean that your personal economy is doing well? And it does not. So we have to get to a point where the average worker is not making 300% less than the CEO. How is that even fathomable? The folks out there doing the work are making 300% less than the folks sitting in the office making the decisions about the work. They're not the innovators. They're not seeing this at a macro or a micro level where, you know, they're given a problem and they're told to solve it, and they go out here and they work their tails off to solve it, and they take the lessons from losing, just like the lessons from winning, to make the product and or the service or whatever that much better. You know, they're not doing that. Yet they're still making 300% less than the person whom simply says, hey, do me a favor, go downstairs or call this person and have them call that person. How does that work? That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, but again, the cost of everything, pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, is on a sharp rise, period. And we have to do something about that, because people will become extremely desperate, and desperate people will do desperate things. And that's when we get into situations where crime has no zip code, because they don't care. They're just trying to survive. They're just trying to survive, and they don't care what they have to do in order to survive. But they understand that mama's hungry, sister's hungry, daughter's hungry, brother's hungry, father's hungry. They understand that they have no roof over their heads.
Technically, we've never seen any of these mantras actually work. Communism is oppressive. Socialism is poverty prone. Capitalism mm-hmm. is exploitive. You understand? None of these actual systems work unto themselves, because, well, for one reason, they don't even exist unto themselves. There's a little bit of socialism and communism. Mm-hmm. And there's a little socialism and capitalism as well, because it takes all of us to agree to buy the crap and to put actual value into the pressed printed paper. It takes all of us to really agree on the illusion.
Right.
So while we're all in this great monetary illusion together, if we're going to do this fake thing called wealth, then we should at least make it to where it doesn't it doesn't make the have-nots so fucking angry. Because I'm going to tell you, all those ideas we just got through mentioning, the only one that doesn't really bring people rioting in the streets to level the playing field is socialism with a touch of communism in there. Socialism would have you spreading the money so thin that nobody gets nothing, while communism would have you laying down the kind of laws that would have you using the money strategically so that some will, in fact, have a little bit more, but they'll need it. What I'm saying different from what you said, Brother Rodney, is that the United States does not have a detailed history of showing where it's ready to do anything. Well, that's not true, because the New Deal was kind of where we kind of touched on it. The idea of we're going to have to do something with the least of thee, and almost a Christian sense that we're going to have to do something legally, politically binding, economic, to where we're going to address the lives, the livelihood of our citizens, so that we can make a change. So what I'm going to say is, whatever, Rodney, I'm with you, whatever we were doing around 1933, 1930 to 1940, to really reinfuse money, other than the war, whatever we were doing in the United States for that, that's the closest you can get to me identifying with what an economy should look like. If people in your economy are suffering, it should be the work of the state to fix that suffering, not one man who's supposed to hire you and spread his wealth that way in some kind of business monopoly. It is the work of the state, in my opinion, to help and fix the livelihood of its citizens. Now, where they get the money from is a whole different, you know, I don't know. That's not my wheelhouse. I do know this. We cannot wait for the average wealth builder to look around himself or herself and put the least of these first. That just doesn't work. And that is what capitalism is. Capitalism is saying, okay, we either going to take some of your money, Mr. Rich Woman or Man, and try to distribute it to keep the workings of the country going, or we're going to give you all these lists of things that you can do to keep the workings of the country going. And if you spend enough money on that, we won't take your money in order to do it. But very little of it is rich people looking around saying, how can I help and do better if this capitalism is too exploitive? So if the American democracy is supposed to be a little spice of capitalism with a socialist skeleton and, an anti-communist brain trust, then it's failing. It's pretty much all capitalist. Very little socialist work is happening. And whoever gets to write the laws is the man with the money, so that can't be communist, because that means it's not even about a dictator or about the grand scheme of the country. It's just people who got money who are able to pay people to legislate on their behalf. It's not the same. So while I would like to say I'm an American, the only time I could have said that, I wasn't even born when America was doing what I think its job is, which is to take all that money and make something actually happen out here on the streets, employ artists, employ, people who employ America. and pretty make America government employees out in the world instead of us having to come to the government to get a job. The government says we want to hire America. The closest they got to that was a Clinton's AmeriCorps program. That was the last one I saw where they tried to come out into the streets and give us some of that damn money they got hoarding up there. So this is the mantra. What are you going to do for the people? If all you're going to do is legislate, then it's not going to work. It turns into pretty much a dictatorship where one dude gets to say, or one group of people get to say whatever is happening. That doesn't work. It's not going to work with all the rich people having the money either, which is what's happening here. Capitalism don't work because rich people don't give a fuck about everybody else without being compelled to do so. And if they have even a crack in there to figure out how not to do so, that's they keep shoving themselves in the crack of not sharing. So socialism is not going to work because we won't have enough. There's too many people. We have bred ourselves out of the capacity to practice socialism correctly. Socialism can only work for small islands, you know, like Fiji or you know, like that. Where it's enough, it's 100,000 people at most, 500,000 people. Yeah, you can go socialist there because whatever you can share is only so much. But America, if we start giving everybody their fair share, we bankrupt the nation, just in New York alone. I don't know what to tell you, Lee, because I never did quite figure this part out, where my alliances lay. But I do know one thing. I don't like rich people.
Said in New York, we would bankrupt the entire nation, right? Because there's just too many people, not enough money and resources to go around. The premise or the notion of reparations, and I really didn't want to go off on that, but it makes sense to slide that in now that we're talking about the socialist piece. I don't think that help always has to be a dollar figure or a dollar in your account. I think help can be in a number of things. I mean, look at interest rates or look at student loan repayments, look at housing, look at land grants, look at – there's a lot of ways that compensation can be made. I think that if America was serious about it, they would have found a way to compensate folks already, and they would have sent that compensation to them and helped them transition through that process of going from a not have to a having something. You know, I think that one of the biggest mistakes of freedom or the Emancipation Proclamation was, you know, you gave people this freedom and they had no clue as to what to do with it. So they basically returned back to the same place or places they were or working under like conditions. The only other thing, though, was they had a quote-unquote perceived freedom, and they were able to earn wages this go around. But, hell, that's when sharecropping came into play. You know, that was just a hustle because, again, you have folks with no education whatsoever, and they're out here toiling the soil like they always had. I mean, how do you put a price or value on work that you've always done for free, and now you're working for somebody? How do you put a valuation on it? How do you get ahead and establish yourself as a smart business owner or a co-op owner? But, again, you have no
– That was the job of the Freedmen's Bureau, see? That's what this is how deep this country got. You think we knew what to do with freedom, Lee. We had left our babies and families behind and ran for freedom. We had been fighting wars for freedom. We had been slaughtering white people for freedom. We had ran to the swamps for freedom. We ran to Canada for freedom. We ran to South America for freedom. We ran down to Mexico for freedom with their dirty self, treating us as bad as the Spaniards did. We knew what to do with freedom. What we are still grappling with, and this is why I listen so intently to Mr. Romney when he talks about his agenda. What we are still grappling with is the hearts and minds of other people who wanted to make sure that there was no opportunity for change. The only thing that changed was your freedom. If people act like we went, even if you did till the soil, that means you were a botanist, a horticulturalist, and you would know the difference between a bean and an okra. You would know the difference between corn and carrot. Nobody has zero education. Even if you till the soil, you know not to throw no seed in no dry-ass dirt. So,
okay,
what I'm trying to say to you is when it was time to sell your labor to somebody, you think you could name whatever price you want to. If they said a penny, they would have said half a penny. And there is no half a penny. You understand? The work was already devalued in the hearts and minds when it got ready to be sold to somebody. It was already your dress that you made and sold for free for that family. When you got ready to sell that same damn dress again, nobody would buy it because you were free to sell it. The actual intent to keep black people in an impoverished state is real. And until people understand that there is a force, there is a malevolent force out there that's aim and idea is to keep black people from ever from eating. And so as soon as we get there, we'll understand, not just from the past, but even in the present, what it's going to take in order for us to fight people who want to storm the Capitol. Fight people who want to take your face off of TV. Fight people who want to raise your rent to where you can't afford it no more. How do we do such things? It's not even a matter of having no education. How do you battle them kind of forces, Lee?
Rodney, I'm sorry. Get back in there, please.
Well, I'm listening to both of you, and after I spoke, you both started out with quite a bit of energy and enthusiasm as if to counter or possibly rebut what I said. And maybe I misinterpreted your enthusiasm, but there's nothing that you all said that I had said. And my point was, I said, I am not a socialist. I said, I've read on it. I said, I'm not a communist. I said, I've read on it. And I said, up until a few to several years ago, I believed I was a capitalist, but I discovered that I'm not a capitalist. That's what I said. So I'm not sure what the difference was. Also, I said the idea of America, and I said that they're solid. As a matter of fact, the ideas of America are very similar to basic African principles. A lot of what America is on paper is very similar to what is practiced in Africa. So, but the issue is not what's on paper, right? It is what do we do? It's one thing to write it. Heck, it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to do it. And in the doing is where this country has fallen short from the beginning. I also said that black people have always, since we've been here, pushed this country before it was a country to be more of who it said that it was than it actually was. Those are the things that I said. Those are the things that I stand by still. And I said that this 1/6 insurrection, it will be black people once again that will save this country and push it beyond it. Or if we, which that means the country, because I'm talking about black people are the saviors of this country. If we fail, the country fails, And unfortunately for us, if the country fails, communism slash socialism, but primarily communism, will be the rule of the day, because the next two greatest powers are communist countries that are doing their darndest to disrupt us and being quite successful at it by pushing this country apart using the fractions that were already there. So if for black people, we, even when we were slaves, pushed this country to be more what it said that it was, which is solid principles. America, contrary to popular belief, because once again, this is the pablum that we were all fed in these white supremacy madrasas that the majority of Americans attend for 12 years, is that we are not only are we a capitalist country, but since roughly the 80s in Ronald Reagan's days, just before him, we are a free market capitalist country. Well, that is actually not true. That is this misinformation. It is disinformation. Basically, it's an out-and-out lie. America is not and never has been, by definition, a capitalist country, nor has it been a free market country. Those things are political talking points that unfortunately has taken hold, and because most of us don't know, we accept what we have been told, which is natural to do. America, by definition, and Rossi, she was right when she talked about the basketball going dribbling around in a circle, and I said, oh, she said Curly Neal. That's kind of what she did on the point of America when she was talking about socialism, is America actually is, by definition, a country that has a mix of capitalism for sure,
and socialism.
But it also has a huge chunk of it that is socialism. The idea of America, and this is what we have to grasp, is to take the best from the rest of the world. This is the American idea, to take the best in the world, bring it here, and then utilize it that benefits us. Irish potato, bring it. If it's African bodies, bring it. Here's one. If it is African rice, which America did not have rice until Africans came here, which became America's primary first cash crop, again, came from Africa, right? The ideas of America came from Africa. So we have to know who we are. We have to know who we're supposed to be, and then we have to strive for it. And there's a line that talks about that more perfect union. Yeah, it's just words, but that's what we should be striving for. And I still maintain, and I'm in the battle-born state, Nevada, that had a huge part in defeating the Confederates temporarily, or at least on the battlefield, Nevada, is we have to continue to push. And historically, women's rights came about because of black people. Disability rights came about because of black people. Even Native American rights came about because of black people. Asian rights came about because of black people. Black people have been pushing the white man to be who they said that they were on paper since before we got here. And I think, I believe, we have to know our position in the structure of this country, the roles that we have historically played, and then wrap ourselves around it and once again play that role, because in saving this country, once again, also saves us.
You said that we will save the country. How do you see that playing out? I mean, as fractured of a people as we are, and we know that that's done on purpose. How did you see us pulling ourselves together and pushing in that direction to make the country move forward? Because as I said earlier, I believe, you know, this isn't about I didn't say that, but I'll say it now. We are divided by our economics. We're divided by our faith. We're divided. We allow our economics to divide us. We allow our faith to divide us. Hell, some of us are so petty, we allow the fact that our affiliations with organizations to divide us. How do you see that those divisions being overcome and some unity taking place?
Well, knowledge typically is what brings us together. However that knowledge we get is what brings us together. It's usually ignorance, a level of stupidity that tends to drag us apart. And so one of the reasons why I call Nevada, and specifically Las Vegas, but Nevada, the West Coast Black Mecca, and I believe we're on our way to just being the Black Mecca of this country, is that the power, potential power, that all Black people have in this country, and especially here in Nevada, is a game changer. When you look at the fact that in Georgia, you have a Jewish man and a Black man representing the state in its two senator seats. That happened because of Black people. No, it wasn't just Black women. It happened because of Black people. That's the reality of it. As a matter of fact, simply saying that it was Black women that did it is a part of the things that tend to separate us, is by saying, no, we're not going to, even though Black people voted well over 90%, it was just one half of them that did it. That is divisive in nature. Black people did that, and Black people did that with the support of a bunch of other people, but without Black people, it simply would not have happened. So we have to recognize our power, and this is my friend from Eat My Dessert First, Lisa Mosley, says it. We have to recognize our value. Now, in order to recognize it, I don't think it just comes to us, right, that all of a sudden the sky opens up and like a switch, we have it. No, we have to be taught it. And what we have been taught is that we have done nothing, we are worth nothing, therefore we deserve nothing. That's what's fed into us in these white supremacy madrasas and in media. That's why I have the reading clubs, is to tell the real story, right? But I can only do so much. It is the collective we that has to do it. And I would say this, because people say, well, Rodney, you keep talking about politics. No, it's about money. And I always go back and say it's about both. Ultimately, it's about people. But when it comes to politics and money, it's not one versus the other. It's both. Because in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that people have suddenly discovered Black Wall Street, as you are representative of the Joe Mann Black Wall Street group, right? People have, and I don't blame anybody for just learning it because they weren't taught it in school. So if you didn't know that you didn't know, how would you know to seek it? But what I'm saying is when we don't teach a thing, it opens up the door for unscrupulous characters like we see to make up something that we will believe, as we see in 1/6. And so what sport has Black people entered that we didn't dominate? And here's a basic factoid. Immediately after Black people were free, with the vast majority of them not being able to read nor right, they became senators, congresspeople, school board trustees, assembly people, you name it, they did it. That was right after slavery. Mm-hmm. And it was through them that pushed for a lot of things, though on the opposite side, there were racist white men who did their darndest to push back. It took them about 7 years, but they did it. But the point is, those people who were just a year before who were slaves started changing the basic makeup of the halls of power of this country, which is the same thing that happened when we got into athletics. Once we got in, we dominated. If you look at academia, once we were free, led academically in this country. That's our power. That's the same power that we had in creating civilization throughout the planet. We did that, but we have to know it. So I would say the basic answer to your question is we have, going back to eat my dessert first, is we have to know our value, we have to know our worth, and the way that we do that is we have to learn it, and for those who don't know, it is up to those who do know to teach them. That is the basic foundation of our elevation in this country and what will ultimately lead to the saving of this country. And if we are not successful, though it is not totally up to us, I'm just stating how history has been in this country, if we do not do it, if we turn our backs on it, if we are not successful, if we try it, then this country will be no different than 1930s Nazi Germany. As a matter of fact, that's where we're pretty close today. And you all know what happened after the 30s into the 40s. The difference is that black people will be the Jews of America, as black people, we should say the Jews of Germany were the black people of America, because it happened here first, and Hitler took many of the ideas from here that he used to exterminate the Jews because he saw how effectively primarily white racist men used it here. We have the power. Are we willing to use the power, or will the power just stay dormant as potential power, and those who we're stronger than act like they have the power and continue to run roughshod over us and run this country in the ground? I have the power, and I'm going to exercise my power. I realize I cannot do it by myself, but we have the power. Let's exercise the power.
And I want us to remember and people to remember, because you say, you know, we don't know. So let's remember there were 12 million people that were the victims of the Nazi Holocaust. 6 million of them were Jews. There were a lot of black folks that the Germans killed as well, because they were non-pure blood. They were not Aryan. So there was another portion of the Holocaust that affected black folks living in Germany. There were a lot of black folks living in Germany, and a lot of them were killed by the Germans as well. So let's never allow that to be forgotten either. Germany was a very racist country for a long time, a long time. Hell, when I got there, the first time I went to Germany, I think it was 93. Yeah, I want to say that was the first time I went to Germany. And it had gotten a hell of a lot better, because the United States government was there for a long time, and there was a lot of mixed babies running around in Germany. But it was still rough. It was definitely still rough. And they were not afraid to let you know it. But, I don't want that to be a forgotten part of history either, because it's a very important part of history. There were 12 million people that were victims of genocide that the Third Reich imposed upon the world. Not just six. Not at all. But, okay. I see your point.
I want to say that desire to fix this country, to ride it out, to do whatever they can, that's the same they said when they came in on the 6th. They came to tear down this what wasn't working and do their best to put in place what they felt like was working, Donald Trump. That's what they thought. Like, how do you... Two groups storm one building. Both of them have saying the same thing. We're going to fix this. okay? But the fix, but they're, both of their fixes is different. That's the battle. We're not the only one trying to change this country. Some people are trying to reverse change.
So, Rousey, I just want to be clear. There was one group that stormed the Capitol. Those were white terrorists who happened to also be racist, and the vast majority of them were Republicans. That's just a fact of it. And let's not muddy the waters of who they were, who they still are. That's what happened. You know, there's a meme that went up, and it's a beautiful meme. It says, I think, a million man march. And I'm paraphrasing. And not a single person.
Yep.
Not a single body.
Storm the Capitol. 1996, a million men went to D.C. and not a single one stormed the Capitol. Absolutely.
So let's not muddy the waters. In 1963, when Dr. King and those other great black men and women civil rights leaders to Washington, D.C., not a single one of them stormed the Capitol. Not one. The biggest gathering that had ever happened up until that point. And not a single one of them stormed the Capitol. So let's not forget the reality.
They did worse than storm the Capitol, Mr. Rodney. They just stayed. They stayed in D.C. That was not... They came to, and they never left. That was the actual problem.
But they did not. Ooh. The point is, they did not storm the Capitol. There was no insurrection.
Hold on, Rodney. Who are you talking about? They came and they stayed. Ooh.
So a lot of the people who came in 1963 to protest with Martin Luther King, the state of affairs, civil rights affairs.
Okay.
They just stayed in D.C. They never left.
Okay. I'm sorry. I wanted to be clear on who you were talking about because, D.C. was a.k.a. Chocolate City for a long time, and the folks that came in 96 did not just stay. Hell, a lot of them already lived there. Well, not necessarily in D.C. because, let's be clear, not a whole lot of people live in D.C., period. Most people live in Maryland or Northern Virginia, but I got you. Okay. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure we were clear as to who she was talking about, what she was saying, but, they stayed. I wasn't sure what group of folks she was talking
referring
to.
But if you were to do an interview, Mr. Rodney, if you took a microphone, which they did, into the crowd, right, into the crowd of people, all of them in there were saying, these were patriots. These were nationalists. These were some young, old men, women, and they love this country. They don't hate this country. They love this country.
Which crowd?
The January 6th crowd.
The insurrectionists. They're not patriots. Again, language and words are important. These people carried a Confederate battle flag into the halls of the United States Congress, which had not been invaded since 1812, and then it was the British. Even during the Civil War, the Confederate battle flag did not make it to the halls of Congress. The United States of the Confederacy was not the United States. Therefore, these people cannot be and were not patriots of this country. Now, they may have been patriots of the United States of the Confederacy, which was not the United States of America, and that is a very important delineation that has to be made. Those folks who stormed the Capitol, by definition, America's definition, not Rodney's definition, they did not even act as citizens of this country. They were terrorists.
That's not what
citizens they are. Are terrorists. That is who they were. And that is who they are. I stand on it. I will not be moved from it. And nor should you. History is important. The facts of it is important. We cannot let the rhetoric of those who claim to be what they are not, and just because they have the power of whiteness, nah, they were insurrectionists. They were no different than the insurrectionists who took over government in the insurrection of Wilmington, North Carolina in 1898. This has played out before. The issue, and this is why knowing history is so important, there was no recompense when there was nothing done to the white supremacists, the terrorists, who did the insurrection of Wilmington, North Carolina in 1898. And we see what that led to. My people, those associated with the Gullah Nation, were displaced, the largest concentration of Gullah people possibly in this country, for sure, in Carolina, were displaced from where they had businesses, where they participated in government because of an insurrection of white terrorists. Nothing was ever done. Wilmington, North Carolina was a beacon of what this country could have been and was on its way to being. And then it took almost 100 years for it to start kind of sort of heading back in that direction because nothing was done about it. I actually agree with Nancy Pelosi. Here's one. If we're talking about in Congress having a commission on terrorism, do we invite Al-Qaeda? Do we invite the Islamic State? Do we invite them to the table? If we're talking about hacking, do we invite, like X45 wanted to do, the people who hacked us to the discussion to determine what went wrong and to prevent it in the future? No, we don't do that. So what Speaker Pelosi did was 100% correct. Don't bring the insurrectionists on to disrupt our business. So words are important. Knowing the real history and stating it as it is, it's hugely important now, because when we do not, the opposition, the terrorists, seize on those words. They seize the moment, and then they try to use that to somehow bring legitimacy to what is illegitimate. What happened on 1-6 was an aberration, but it was an aberration that's been building, because for too many years, we've allowed these things to happen. We have spoken so nicely around white people. We have tiptoed around it. Going back to Rashi's point, we dribbled that basketball around the point instead of putting it on the point. The point is that America has always been two Americas. You have the white racist men on one side, and then you have everyone else. You have white women who were ruled and controlled by the white men, who oftentimes turned a blind eye to what happened. And what we saw is when those white women started rejecting a little bit of what those white men were saying, we got, whether we think he's the ideal candidate or not, which he is not, but we got Joe Biden instead of X45. Remember, there were more people who voted for X45 the second time than the first time. So this is something that's systemic. General Colin Powell said there's a dark vein that has always run through this country. That is the reality. But as much as that is the reality, another reality is also that black people have always pushed this country to be the idea that it says it was, that it never truly was. And it is, and I still maintain that it is black people today, and now my adopted state of Nevada, has the potential, because we have to actualize it, right, has the potential to be a huge player in changing the direction of this country, mainly because we have the largest concentration of black people west of the Mississippi, and we have the fifth largest school district in the nation, that if we simply change the curriculum, the school books, and the standards of what's being taught in the fifth largest district in the nation. It has a ripple effect throughout this country in smaller districts because oftentimes they don't have the money to commission books like we do. So they just use the books, you know, order more books like what we have. There's power in us. Yeah, there's power in us. Again, Warnock is the senator from Georgia, right? That happened because we made it happen. And we made Joe Biden the president instead of X-45, which kept this nation from totally sliding into the ocean. That's what we had to do it because we had to save the nation, because in saving the nation, we save us. The question that I ask, though, is sometimes does it have to be broken in order for it to be fixed?
I want to transition a little bit. And, Rosh, this is where you may check out a little bit because we're starting to talk about military stuff, but this is important. So General Milley was so concerned about 45 trying to use the military for a coup that the general took preemptive steps to ensure that this did not happen. Again, going back to the beginning of my comments when I said I don't think most people understand how close we were to chaos. Rodney, can you imagine getting that lawful order from, well, it actually would be unlawful order, getting that unlawful order from the transitioning commander-in-chief, because he would not have been out until January, but the transitioning commander-in-chief to stand ready to defend the White House against the transition team of the incoming Biden administration that had been duly elected and certified. Could you imagine actually getting that order?
So the interesting thing about that is a part of that had already happened, because many people may not be aware of it, and I think it's in the book called The Nightmare Scenario, or was it Zero Fail? There's so many of those books that came out. I think it was Zero Fail. The Secret Service had already been co-opted by X-45. As a matter of fact, he had one of the supervisors from the Secret Service in his cabinet, on his team. Secret Service agents were wearing the MAGA hats, the new Confederate hats that they call MAGA hats. Mm-hmm. They were wearing mm-hmm. those and had them on their desk. As a matter of fact, when Joe Biden, you know, when he was elected, there were Secret Service agents that openly commented, and you can pull this off of social media, that they would not protect him because they had been infected by the virus of X-45's poisonous rhetoric and did not believe that he was the duly elected president. Therefore, they did not have to protect him with their life. That by itself is huge. That by itself, right? We know that there were military people, active duty, reservists, retirees, and veterans, about 20% of the people who attacked our country on 1/6 were veterans, one form or the other, military people. We also, and hopefully the 1/6 commission, will get to the bottom of why it took so long for the National Guard to respond to protecting, to defending and protecting the Capitol. We know uh-huh. General Flynn's brother, General Flynn, inserted himself in that chain of command. To the direct question of the order, I think you clarified it and you said it succinctly. It would have been an illegal order, and the military yeah. has taken an oath that we know oaths are only as good as the belief of the person, but the military right. takes an oath, and in a part of our duty is that we have an obligation, not just don't do it, But we have an obligation not to follow an illegal order, an immoral order, or an unethical order. As a matter of fact, we're supposed to run it up the chain of command. Not only are we not supposed to do it, but we're supposed to run it up the chain of command. And what maybe many don't know is that General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, first of all, he has no combat authority over the military, so that's where X-45 was wrong. But, of course, if you walk in like a boss, people will assume you're the boss, right? But he has no military authority to do it. That's the first thing. The second thing is General Milley, when he – and you talked about him coming up with a plan. He had already corresponded and talked with Congress because General Milley works for the Secretary of Defense. He is the chief military advisor to the President of the United States, but direction for the
Rodney, don't do that to me right now. We're starting to get good. Oh, brother, what happened? All right, so I'll pick it up until you find your way back. So, here's the disturbing thing to continue on with what he was saying. You know, we have a very large arsenal within the United States military, and to turn that arsenal against the citizenry of our nation at the whim of anyone is and could be catastrophic. Not only a blow to, and I'll use Rodney's word, the ideals of America, the spirit of America, but also to how effective we can govern ourselves moving forward. Not even talking about the rest of the world and the impression that we leave on the rest of the world, but that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is even more fearful to me than an attack from another country, because I believe that we can handle just about anything else, just about anything that anyone chooses to try to throw at us, but we cannot handle an internal implosion like that. That would not be good at all in any way, shape, or form. You know, again, you're going back to basically the Civil War, brother against brother, sister against sister. It would pretty much be the same damn thing. You know, here you are with your AR-15s and whatever else you may have. You know, most people aren't very giving when it comes to details of their personal arsenal. But against folks whom are walking around with 50 calibers and the like, and that's just a no win. It's a no win. And to rebound as a nation from that, again, because of one individual's misguided perception of winning and losing, just is not palatable. Would you agree, Rashi? Can you imagine that?
I do agree. I do agree. One of the things I would like to bring up is because you talked earlier about us having listeners and about us having people call in and write in. And before we go much further into the subject you were just discussing, I would like to bring up the comment that someone sent us here at Real Radio, okay?
Okay. I'm not seeing it. I saw Rodney say something about it, but I'm not seeing it. So I was going to comment on it, but.
Okay, and it says, we have all been under the control or ownership of the elite since the country was founded. And we are all owners of America. No, we are all under the owners of America to one degree or another. Definitely worse for Black and Native Americans. But most white men are also kept down by white men that rule our lives. And I thought that was actually interesting, Mr. Rodney, that our listeners are the kind of people who understand that. No one is actually 100% free. All of us have some kind of indebtedness to buy, to spend, to trade, to barter in order to keep. And so in doing so, somebody always gets rich. And those rich people end up having a lot of power over our lives. What do you think about that comment, Lee, about even white people being, you know, that we have this us-them mentality, but there's a lot of white people who also feel like they are, pawns in the game?
Well, they are because, you know, in a lot of ways, yes, racism is the backbone of the American society. But this thing has transitioned and pivoted, as most things do, as most viruses do, as we'll talk about the coronavirus a little later, a.k.a. the Corona Man, as you like to call it. You know, it gets greedy, and people get greedy. So no longer is it strictly about race or color. It's also about circumstance and your valuation. And if your valuation is lesser than my valuation, then you too are now underfoot. So I don't care what you look like or where you're from, if your name is Kyle or if your name is Lakeith. Brother, you ain't earning enough money to be in this race, so your ass is in the back with the rest of them. So get back there and play your position. So and that's how it, but that's how capitalism works. Capitalism doesn't care your color. Capitalism cares about the amount of money that you make, and or the amount of money that you saved, or the amount of money that you've built and you have to freely spend or not spend, but you have it and it's greater than the other people around you, and that's how capitalism works. But we have Rodney back too, so I wanted to get back to his comment because I told him I would after we allowed you to get yours in. And whomever's listening, the listener, thank you for your question. But again, I couldn't see it. Rodney posted it. I wasn't sure if that was its entirety, so I wanted to I was trying to see it, and then we would go address it from there. But again, thank you so much, whomever you are, he or she, to for your comment. Go ahead, Rodney. You were just getting okay, good, bro. And I continued on, and I just spoke on, just so you, I can catch you up. I don't know what you heard and what you didn't hear, but I just spoke to the fact of, you know, thinking of the military being used against the average citizen would liken us back to the Civil War, brother against brother, sister against sister. And there would be a very hard pivot to get back to our normality after that was to take place. Because again, here you are with your AR-15 and whatever you may have in your arsenal going against folks with 50 calibers and other weapons. And we don't need to go into the other part, because you and I are familiar with the other part, but everyone may not be, and that just wasn't going to work. I mean, it's just not going to be good. That's where I left it off at and left space for you, bro.
Yeah, well, first of all, the listener tried to post it on the page, and we'll discuss it after the show why she wound up sending it to me. And her name is Lynn, actually. And Lynn is a white woman.
Oh, thank you, Sister Lynn.
Various people.
She's like one of the Kardashians. And
especially here in the 702, because there are a lot of people, and especially more white women, who understand where we are, because they were oppressed by white men too up until the 60s. That's why they had that whole feminist thing, was they wanted to enjoy freedoms, and this is from the founders of the feminist movement. They wanted to enjoy what they perceived to be the freedoms of black women, because the feminist movement was based off of how white women saw black women. And there's still a thought that black women have more freedom than them to this day because they are directly under the white man. So chew on that for a minute. So, Lynn, and to everyone else locally in the 702 as well as everywhere else for listening and adding your comments in, because white women, they weren't going to get the right to vote until the right for black people was forced on them with the end of the Civil War. And so they could not have black people over any white person, even, and I put in air quotes, the lowly white woman. And so that helped push white men to give white women the right to vote. And that's how, once again, blackness and black people pushed this country towards who it said it was versus who it actually had become. And what I don't know if you guys had heard it, but I had ended up my comment about the military is that General Milley actually did use the chain of command because he went to Congress, Speaker Pelosi, and shared his concerns because I had said that, I don't know if you guys heard it, that even when General Washington was called to Congress to report, he did something that some people might consider performance art today. And that's when he reported to Congress, he physically bowed to Congress because it was his belief that Congress was, as it is supposed to be, the representatives of the people, and that the people had ultimate authority over anything that he would do as a general and anything that he would do as president. So the only recognized authority once you get past the SECDEF, which is the immediate supervisor of the chairman of the JCS, is the president. And since both of them
Roddy, you're using way too many acronyms that most people don't have any other. You and I are relating, but like, what the hell is the SECDEF? What's the JNAS? What is he talking about? Joint Chiefs of Staff.
So Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Defense, which is
right.
Who actually gives the orders of battle to the military, not through the JCS or Joint Chiefs of Staff. And then there's a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is the position that General Milley has, which is a non-combatant role. He has no authority over war making for this country. That goes to, I believe, it's 7 combatant commanders. These are the actual field commanders who do give the orders to our military men and women to actually prosecute a war against others. So because the Secretary of Defense, and in this case, the President, the Commander-in-Chief, were the problem, General Milley was textbook. He then went to Congress under the Speaker of the House because from a historical nature, the only ones, and even to the Constitution, if you read the Constitution, it says that Congress has overall authority over the United States military. Well, over the United States military. The president is the commander in chief, right, when we need to execute something. But that comes from the Congress. And so he used the chain of command perfectly and went to Congress, and in this case the Speaker of the House, to share his concerns about the insurrectionist POTUS, who agreed with him, and steps were legally taken because General Milley is not authorized to follow an illegal, immoral, or unethical order. Not only is he charged not to do it, but he's also charged to elevate it. And in his case, the only place to elevate it was to Congress.
So I want to be clear. You know, a lot of people may, and I'm sorry to derail your train a little bit, but a lot of people may not understand when we emphasize lawful or unlawful, right? So a superior can give you an order because they are your superior. But then it's up to you to determine if that order is lawful or not, i.e., you know, they can tell you, hey, I need you to go clean it up. Okay, totally legal. But then they may come back and so say to you, hey, I need you to go in there and kill those three people. No, no, dog, we ain't killing nobody. This ain't the killing nobody time. You know, the military just ain't there to kill people. Contrary to popular, well, some people's beliefs, we're not there just to kill people. You know, we're actually a peacekeeping arm of the government. Peacekeeping. If we got to go to war, then we got to go to war. But the goal is for us to keep the peace. And you know, sometimes that's just from this auspicious display, as John Wayne said in Rio Bravo, you know, we may be saving some poor fool's life. And you come in with some warships and some planes and some tanks, and you show up to the border, and that may just curb other people's appetite to go shooting some bullets. And that may all be what you need. But sometimes you show up, they want to shoot some shots, and you may have to return a couple of shots and blow them out the water. But that's a different story for a different time. So, you know, understanding the pressures that the former president was under, understanding the mindset of the former president, this is not someone whom, if you are in good standing in your mind, would want to follow their orders blindly. So it was very important that we had good people in position to make the decision as to whether they were going to take the word of said person or not. We were fortunate enough to have good people whom said they were cautious of this guy's intent, and they were not going to blindly follow anything that came out of his mouth. So as you said, General was preemptive. He followed the chain of command. In this case, his only recourse was for him to go to Congress and to talk to the Speaker, and they then put a plan in place to prevent something like that from happening. So, yeah, that's what's up, man. But, I needed to stress to people so they understood that you just don't blindly do what someone tells you to do. You know what I'm saying? There is a huge difference between an unlawful order and a lawful order. And the unlawful order, if followed, will get your ass living with. And, you know, you'll be seeing Roxanne, you know, being got to put out the red light. So, no, that ain't good. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, you know, you hitting your Eddie Murphy voice. You know, so yeah, no, we ain't doing that. Go ahead, Rodney, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that was all good. But, you know, so I did want to get back to the point that how, you know, you talked about how close we came. We literally were at the edge of it, because whenever you get to that level of power and authority, having to be exercised like unlike any other time in history, we were close. When those people put their feet up on the Speaker's desk, and when the gentleman went in and said, "We took the Capitol, how about we set up a new government?" You know, that's close, right? And we should not. We should take that seriously, because August is what? How many days away? And according to the insurrectionists, to the terrorists,
supposed to happen again.
Supposedly, the terrorist in chief is supposed to be reinstated, which is no such thing, but it's supposed to be reinstated in August, which I think goes way back into history on presidential appointments. But if that is the case, This 1-6 commission is very late, because the question is, did they have intelligence? Did somebody sit on it because they were white and white is right and everybody else get back? Did they not believe what they were reading because white people would never do anything like that in the eyes of white people and maybe even in others, right? If we don't get to the bottom of that, which is too late to get before August, right? But it's hugely important that for not just for history, but how to prevent it from happening again, unlike what happened in the insurrection of Wilmington, North Carolina in 1898 when they just let it fly, which possibly led to the insurrection that we just had on 1-6, that we could have another insurrection on 8-1, right, if we don't do something really quickly to prevent it. And these, if you listen to the chatter on the white terrorist networks, and we should call them terrorists. That is what they were. They were not patriots unless they were patriots of the Confederacy, right? That's not who they were. Timothy McVeigh was not a patriot, even though he served in the military. He blew up illegally a federal building and murdered a bunch of people, including children. These insurrectionists were trying to – I don't even like Mike Pence, but as a veteran, and if I was still wearing a uniform, I would have had to protect Mike Pence from the terrorists because they were enemies of the state. They were trying to hang Mike Pence under the direction of the terrorists in chief. The Secret Service, if you listen to the reports, Mike Pence was so scared to leave and thought the government was so fractured that he thought if he got into his limousine to leave the Capitol, that his Secret Service agents that he trusted would desert him or somehow be removed and that he might die. That's from the insert of one of the recent books. What's that?
What's wrong with Darth Vader? Why don't you like Darth Vader? What's wrong with Darth Vader?
He wouldn't. He didn't. He didn't vote for some stuff. He didn't veto or vote. I remember it was back when he was asking him to unseat people and veto something, or it was some testimony he wouldn't give or gave. It was some. It was something. It was some power he had. He had the power, but he wouldn't.
No,
use
he did
it.
Not have the power. He did not have the power nor the authority. What the terrorist in chief had urged the vice president to do was not to certify the election, because remember, the vice president is the president of the Senate. So when they go and they count the electoral votes, they have to be certified. And then the vice president, or then president of the Senate, has to certify that, and then the process continues. It's really a ceremonial role, and what the terrorist in chief had begged some more, cajoled the vice president was to overstep the boundaries of his authority and not certify what was legal.
Roddy, I don't understand.
So Race Bannon,
Bannon
did what he was supposed to do.
Roddy, all we need
I'm sorry, Mike.
Couple thousand votes. That's all we needed. I don't understand what Mikey's problem was. I mean, this is a little thing. This is a small thing. I mean, all Mikey had to do was give me a little time. I would have found the votes. I would still be president right now. I don't understand what Mikey's problem is. So for you to say that Mikey did the right thing, I don't get it. It's a couple thousand votes. I could have found that anytime. Backyard, right there. Not a problem. Georgia, not an issue. Not an issue whatsoever. Could have found a couple thousand votes. Could have pulled them out of nowhere. You know, I mean, as many votes came in from China, they were suspects. You know, they had wax on them. Could have thrown those things right out of there. Wouldn't have been an issue. I don't get it. I don't get it. The mindset of these people, dude.
Yeah, yes. You're being facetious, but that's actually right. And a part of that is a level of ignorance that it's a void of knowledge, which means there's a level of ignorance, which was then filled with some of this bovine defecation from the terrorists in chief. That's why it's so important that Ben Franklin, one of the things he said, and I have mixed feelings about Ben, but Ben Franklin said that you have a republic if you can keep it, right? And because he knows that democracies are the easiest forms of government to fail, because that's right. What history had proven up to that date. But one of the other things that I believe it was Franklin or Jefferson, one of them, said that in order for a democracy to work, you have to have an educated electorate. The electorate is the people, the mm-hmm. voters. And that is what this country has done a horrible job in. And I would say that was purposely so, because they know that if we're not educated, then they can come up with some stuff that they've come up with and tell us not to believe our lying eyes. Right, exactly. And so because of that, so one of the things that I advocate for is not just the integration and incorporation of African / African-American history and culture throughout all curriculum in all publicly funded schools and institutions of higher learning like colleges and universities. So that is the critical important ingredient that must happen. But right next to it, we also have to do a better job of educating our people on how our form of government actually works and how it is supposed to work and how it actually works. We have to do a better job on that, because if
Thomas
people
Jefferson,
were
by
more
the way.
Educated, okay, thank you, if Thomas, President Jefferson, we have to do a better job of educating our people on how government works so that they can exercise their authority as the true leaders of government. It's the people. It's not the elected official. And, we've gotten away from that because we're not taught it.
But do we not think, too, that a part of this rat race that we're running, that most of us are subjected to, is not designed for that? When I hear people, and it personally makes me cringe, I hear people say, I don't listen to the news. I don't pay attention to the news at all. Never have, never will. It's so depressing. Like, everything that you hear through the idiot box, everything you hear is not going to be 100% accurate. Okay, that's cool. But it should at least give you a point of reference so that you can find for yourself the information or the details that were left out. Then you can make a better informed decision. And right. That's the part that really gets me when I hear folks say, I don't listen to the news. I never watch the news. But now, I'm bad, very bad. I don't watch the local news. I've said that a million and one times. I said that because it's not my focus, because it doesn't help. It doesn't help me with this, right? With this, we've made the choice to keep this not a local type situation. Now, sometimes the local stuff is necessary to bring into it, but it's not about being right around the corner. The show is geared toward national and international issues. It's not about hard lines, border lines, anything like that. I met a young lady on Facebook the other day, and we had a great conversation, hoping to get her on the show. She's going through a battle with the British government, because her father came over as part of the push from the Crown during World War II when they needed labor and fighters, right? And he got his citizenry that way. She was born in Germany while he was stationed in Germany. She is his only child that was born in Germany. She's now being told by the Crown that she's an illegal citizen, and they're trying to kick her out of the country. They're trying to kick her out of the country to the tune of she has to pay for a working visa every year, and she's shelled out 3,000 quid, 3,000 pounds, quid pounds, same word, in order to stay in the country. So she and I got to talking the other day. I saw the story, read it, reached out to her. She reached back, and we had a very good conversation. We started laughing and talking about places that, because we're in the same age group, that I'm sure we were in the same space at the same time on more than one occasion. We just talking and tripping about that. So I'm hoping to get her on the show to talk about her story. But it's not about borders. It's about being inclusive as much as we possibly can, and being about the business of our people no matter where they are. Okay, so Rodney has another comment from a listener. It says, the country was designed with owners overseers, indentured servants, and slaves, we should look at the systemic design of the Western and most cultures on Earth. I don't disagree with that. You know, this is why, as Rodney has pointed out, the study of the diaspora of our people is very important. But in addition to that, it also tells us world history. You know, African history, African-American history is world history. There was no one before us. Wherever there are people, those people are us. So you can follow that trail throughout the entirety of this world. So yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And listener, thank you very much for that comment. So yeah, but yeah, man, it's very important that we don't lose sight, we don't lose focus during election season, because election season is all the time. Right? And yes, you can get background from it, but it's important that you vote in local elections just like you vote in national elections, because all politics are local. When you control those state houses, when you control those judges and school board members and whomever else you need to control, that's when you can see real change. You know, all this gerrymandering and all this type jazz, all that crap is local. It's local. If you want to get an amendment passed through the Constitution, it has to be approved by 75% of the state. That's local. If you are a Democratic leaning state, but your state representatives are controlled by the Republicans, how's that going to work? Now, the elections, you may lean Democratic, yes, national. But if a referendum were to pass or needed to pass, it's never going to pass in your state. It's never going to pass in your state. And the system is designed for us to be in the cracks. So if you do this, you can't vote. If you do that, you can't vote. Are you sure? Read up on it. A lot of people are pushing for convicted people to get their voting rights back. So you may very well be able to vote in your state. You just have to be sure that you can and you're doing it in the right place. It's no happenstance that folks are getting jammed up for being for voting after a conviction, and those stories are making front page news. They're trying to scare people from voting. You may very well still be able to vote. You just have to know where you can vote and how long it may take before you are instituted in that dynamic. So it may be that you have to get off probation before you can vote again. Okay. So you may have to wait a couple of years. It may be that you can only vote in a certain district. Okay. Then you travel to that district to vote. Do what you need to do, but make your voice heard. Make your vote count. Make it count. Rosh?
I want to have you excuse the background noise because I struck out for my daily walk.
All right.
I guess I want to end it by saying that, you know, it's easy to talk American, but it's really hard to be one. I'm a black 46-year-old divorcee mother of two who works every day, and I still can't find a place to live. I still can't afford my utility rate. I can't afford the maintenance of a car. I can't afford the upkeep of my skill set with continuing education, and yet I'm expected to participate, and not only that, but make a change. I really don't see it right now, but that might just be the point, right? I'm not going to see it right now. So I'm just here keeping the faith in Middle America, trying my best to do my part with the very basics and sometimes nothing at all.
feel you. Ronnie, you want to get in before we wrap it up?
I want to echo what Rashi had to say, because that is not the idea of America. That is what people have made America into, which those who believe in the idea of America should be doing something to make sure that no one has to deal with what Rashi's dealing with right now. That is the basic concept of America, is where you don't have to have anything, but everything is available to you. And not like this pie in the sky available, but no, just hit this, 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 and this, and you will get there. Not you might get there, but you will get there. That's the idea of America. So when I say that I am an American, an African-American, I'm talking about the idea of it. And we should strive to bring that idea into fruition. I believe that anytime someone is restricted from voting, that it is against the concept of America. The idea is should be pushing for greater opportunities for people to exercise the basic underpinning vehicle in America of where people are self-governed, is you have to have the right to vote. So anybody who's doing something to restrict that basic underpinning of America is really going against the idea of America. Lee, I think it was, I hope, to the listeners out there and to everybody who sent me messages, we'll work on how to get that system up and running so you don't have to send them through me, because then I'm only able to get so many to the co-hosts of the show. But I do thank you all for listening, and for even taking the time to try to send messages to us. Lee, that's what I have for today, is the people have to exercise their power, and their power is to be informed voters.
There we go. Well, look, family, I'm going to end it a little different way. I said in the beginning, you know, it's all about energy, and it is. You know, there's life is forever moving forward, be it with us in the physical or not. And hopefully as it moves forward, it moves us to a better place. I wish that for everybody, not just for today, but infinitely. I wish that for everyone to be in this moment, you know, enjoy this moment, because it will never come around again. As I'm continuing to deal with my mom and her Alzheimer's and her dementia, I think and look at life in a totally different perspective. I'm very appreciative of the time that I'm given, and I'm trying to use it to the fullest. To that extent, I made a big boy move last night, and I've been talking about it for the longest time, but I finally bought my tickets to go to Ghana last night. So it is official, and
all right.
About 3 weeks' time, in about 3 weeks' time, I will be on a airplane headed to Ghana for a young man that used to work for me. He's getting married, so I'm going to be a part of that ceremony and enjoying that time with him and his father and so on and so forth. But that is definitely a big boy move, and I'm very proud of myself to have done that. With that being said, I've set up a GoFundMe page because my ass is poor at this point. So,
anything y'all can say, you might as well stay, brother, because that's where it's going to be.
You know what I'm saying? But seriously, family, you all be good. You all be safe. Next week, we'll try to make it a little bit better than we did this week. But until then,